It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worship, worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is present in everyone's heart. Here's an explanation of how those engaged in activities for the welfare of others are very quickly recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, 1868-69, one who preaches the message of Bhagavad Gita to my devotees is most dear to me. No one can excel him in satisfying my worship. There are different kinds of welfare activities in this material world, but the supreme welfare activity is the spread of the Krishna consciousness. Other welfare activities cannot be effective for the laws of nature, and the results of karma cannot be checked. It is by destiny or the laws of karma that one must suffer or enjoy. For instance, if one is given a court order, he must accept it, whether it brings suffering or profit. Similarly, everyone is under obligations to karma and its reactions. No one can change this. Therefore, the Shastra says, Prasyaga hito prayatita kovido naravita yadvamatam upariyadha. One should endeavor that which is for that which is never obtained by wandering up and down the universe as a result of the reactions of karma. What is that? One should endeavor to become Krishna conscious. If one tries to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, he should be understood to be performing the best welfare activity. The Lord is automatically very pleased with him. The Lord is pleased with him, what is left for him to achieve. One has been recognized by the Lord, even if he does not ask the Lord for anything. The Lord, who is within everyone, supplies him whatever he wants. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Nityabhiyuttanam Yavikshen Yadamiham. Again, as stated here, Tapyante Lokatapena Sadavatraya Shojana. Best welfare activity is raising people to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Since the conditioned souls are suffering only for want of Krishna consciousness, the Lord Himself also comes to mitigate the suffering of humanity. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, all descendants of Bharata and the predominant rise of irreligion, that time I descend myself to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. I admit myself, millennium after millennium. Bhagavad Gita 4, 7, and 8. All the Shastras conclude, therefore, that spreading the Krishna consciousness movement the best welfare activity in the world, because of the ultimate benefit this bestows upon people in general, the Lord very quickly recognizes such service performed by a devotee. Tapyante lokatapena sadavaprayaso jana paramaradhana tadi. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshiping the Supreme Personality of God, who is present in everyone's heart. This verse is in reference to Bathsheba, who took the ocean of posing that had been churned by the demigods and humans, and took it in his palm and drank it all and kept it in his throat so it would not cause harm to humanity. Previous verses said, Bathsheba is dedicated to auspicious benevolent work for humanity. Therefore, he compassionately took this whole quantity of poisonous palm and drank it all. Therefore, it is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. We hear about this suffering, and of course, one essential word I always think of in reference to this verse is this word, tapkante, the very first verse, which means tapkante means voluntarily. Just like we were speaking about this morning, how a devotee has to, the voluntary spirit has to somehow be kept in the heart. Anyone who's practicing Krishna consciousness, that voluntary spirit, if it's anyway lost, destroyed, then either by one's own misapplication of the philosophy, or one's strong material motivations, or of course many other influences may be there to damage the voluntary spirit. But when the voluntary spirit is destroyed, the result is that one begins to feel forced, imposed, to take up some activity which he's not so much inclined to do. And we talk about accepting suffering voluntarily for the sake of the people in general. Of course, we know that the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya is given on Nandakanda. So why is it that we're talking about voluntary acceptance of suffering for the sake of people in general? Kiva Nandakanda means that it is joyfully performed. Paramakarana Pavundui Dina Yitai Gura Chandra. This Sari Avatar Sarasirami Sarami. What is the next one? Kiva Nandakanda. Therefore, it is always joyful. Yet, we do know that in our conditioned state, because we ourselves also are not spontaneously attracted to always glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore we find it sometimes not such a joyful process to go out and to glorify Krishna. Srila Prabhupada has always given the emphasis that this is the primary thrust of our movement, is to voluntarily go out and to introduce into Krishna consciousness for the enlightenment of human society. And a devotee is prepared to undergo all kinds of hardships. He's prepared to accept any difficulties, austerities, for satisfying the Lord in this way. And we spoke of, we're speaking of the voluntary spirit. What is it that enthuses or inspires a devotee to actually want to voluntarily accept something which is apparently austere because we still have not gained that spontaneous attraction to always speak about Krishna? What to speak of the fact we also know that when we go out to glorify Krishna, there's a lot of resistance in the hearts and minds of the conditioned souls. There's resistance to actually taking Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada said, sometimes when we're distributing Krishna conscious literature, sometimes we have to employ certain methods in order to induce them to take the book, just as a parent, in order to give the child some medication. They have to tell the child so many different things so that the child will take the medicine, although he may not want to take it. So in the same way, the conditioned souls, they're not so much inclined to take one of these books, not so much inclined to hear about Krishna. They have so many other important things to do, and in their minds being so much attached to pursuits of sense gratification. And when we try to stop them and engage them in Krishna's service, they resist in so many ways and squirm and do not want to or have anything to do with it. So Prabhupada would say, of course, in most different techniques, is that he was specifically in this conversation, therefore he was telling the devotee sometimes may have to glorify the people a little bit. They tell him, my dear sir, you are so intelligent, you are so learned, I can understand that you are the best of all living personalities. At least forget everything you learn. Forget everything you learn and turn your attention to the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Something like that.
Okay. You know,
he said that in another way. That's not the one I was thinking of. Yeah. I mean to say, forget everything you've learned and just and turn your attention to Lord Chaitanya's mercy. To preach in this way, obviously, especially when there's so much resistance and no appreciation, no apparent appreciation for our efforts, we have to give up the fruits of mentality of wanting to enjoy the fruits of our work. And actually, one of the best and most essential meditations for performing sankirtan and for preaching Krishna consciousness in any form whatsoever, it doesn't make any difference whether it be on book distribution, whether it be in a public forum, lecturing, speaking to one person, a guest in the temple. There are unlimited forums for introducing people to Krishna consciousness and trying to get them to make progress. But the best meditation, as always, is that this is my service to my spiritual master in Krishna. And a devotee who voluntarily accepts this service simply for the purpose of satisfying the spiritual master in Krishna, then although there may be so much resistance and there may be so many difficulties, then Krishna helps him to overcome all obstacles by his constant remembrance of the purpose behind his preaching activity. That assistance, of course, is in Krishna, Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, that it is very difficult to make advancement in spiritual life if one does not feel encouragement from the Lord. He specifically speaks about how this is essential in order to make progress. He must feel some form of encouragement, and sometimes we tend to think that the encouragement means that the fruit of result. This is what my impetus, this is what makes me encouraged. Is that when there's some fruit, something tangible, something I can really assess and draw up statistics and present to others. But this is not necessarily the type of encouragement which Prabhupada talks about that one actually needs in order to perform this preaching activity. Encouragement that must be there is that when Krishna is probably quotes the verse here, Nitya Itesham Nitya Bhayuktanam Yogak Shemya Vam Yaham. This verse means to those who are constantly devoted, meditating on the transcendental form, for them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. What Krishna is saying is that whatever they're lacking, Krishna encourages by compensating and gives them whatever they need to overcome their difficulties. And that encouragement, of course, is that they make progress in their own Krishna consciousness. I remember one time, actually I think it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, actually. We were having a discussion in New York back in, I don't know when it was, about 13, 14 years ago. And he was telling a few of his devotees, he said that actually, when you take care of Krishna's devotees, Krishna takes care of you. And at that point, at that point, I really didn't have that much realization on this particular point. But as I stay somehow in Krishna consciousness movement, these words, oftentimes I thought of them, and to see that actually how it's a fact, this Teshan Nitya Bhuktanam Yogi Shema Baham Yaham, that Krishna actually gives us what we're lacking. He encourages us. In this way, by taking care of the devotee who actually simply makes the effort to think of others' welfare, he takes care of all of our problems. The fact is that a preacher gains this experience, he gains this encouragement within the heart, and he sees that actually the more he thinks of how to help others advance in their Krishna consciousness, that his own problems just dissipate, they go away. And the more a devotee dwells upon his own problems and tries to adjust his circumstances in order to alleviate his own problems artificially, the problems will never go away. It's the nature of the material world. The material world is a very problematic place. We have so many different anxieties due to our attachment and identification with the mind and with the body. And whenever we're experiencing this mental distress, sometimes, of course, it's natural. The devotee is in anxiety. He wants to somehow get out of this anxiety. What should I do? Maybe I should read more. Maybe I should hear more. Maybe I should take less prasadam. So many different types of adjustments that we start thinking of, you know, how do I deal with this anxiety that I'm in right now? Because we certainly experience sometimes there's happiness, sometimes there's distress. Much less precious to call to Yasi Toshman to Kaduka Dhat. Agamatayam Nichestam Sutikshasa Bharata. But the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer season. They arise from sense perception, and Krishna tells Arjuna one has to learn to tolerate it, to teach it. One has to tolerate it without being disturbed. So, how is it that a devotee tolerates these distresses? Of course, how is it that he's actually able to become tolerant? Just like the characteristics are also of the devotee described, Titiksha Vakurulaka, Suri Dham Savadehima. That the symptoms of a devotee of a sadhu is that he's tolerant, he's merciful, he's friendly towards all living beings. He has no enemies. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. These are the characteristics or symptoms of a sadhu, of one who's actually engaged in devotional service. So this tolerance, of course, is developed very nicely on Sankirtan. The devotee learns how to tolerate so many different types of inconveniences. If you actually add them up, all the different types of inconveniences that are placed before us in the face of preaching to the conditioned souls, we'll see that there are many unlimited inconveniences, especially for those devotees who go on to distribute Krishna conscious literature. There is the resistance of the conditioned souls, the criticism. There are the elements such as the weather, with these different types of climatic conditions obviously offer different types of obstacles as well. There is resistance not only from the people that we're distributing the books, there's resistance from the government, there's when we're trying to distribute in certain places, there's these types of obstacles that will be there. To spread a spiritual movement in the material world, one should have the firm understanding and conviction that there will always be resistance. Because a spiritual movement cannot spread by any type of material formula. There will always be obstacles until one actually becomes completely free. And Prabhupada would even say sometimes that the proof of the efficacy of our movement is when we see how much resistance there is to our preaching. That's proof that our preaching is effective when people actually try to resist or obstruct a devotee's efforts to preach. These obstacles are there for the devotee to learn tolerance, just as Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, it was actually Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur in the pastime of Haridas Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, who describes that the particular pastime of Haridas Thakur and how he was beaten and whipped by the prison guards sent by Nawab Nakazi due to their envious position towards Haridas Thakur. The particular type of suffering that was inflicted upon him was actually what is the point I was going to make? It's just drew a blank. Oh, yeah. It was to show to the world that actually, under all circumstances, a devotee should never give up chanting Hare Krishna. Under all circumstances, he should never give up glorifying the Lord. He said, this is what must be learned from this particular pastime. Just as Haridas Thakur, when the Nawab Hussein Shah, was speaking to him, and the Qazi, of course, the envious Qazi, was prompting the Nawab to punish him, to beat him. And of course, the Nawab was a little bit sympathetic. He wasn't quite so much inclined to do it initially, but he was prodded by the envious Qazi. So when he requested Haridas Thakur, well, why don't you at least, and he tried to give him a little concession, so that they wouldn't have to beat him up. Why don't you at least preach according to our own scripture, the Quran? And at least if you do this, then, because this is a Muslim village, you cannot go out and around chanting the holy names of God in this way, the Hindu God. And Haridas Thakur said, that even if you cut my body to pieces, I will never give up chanting the holy name of the Lord. So the envious Qazi, of course, he said, well, we'll see how Haridas Thakur will be able to survive our beating. And then, when he did not concede to the wishes of the Qazi, and then they now have instructed to take him out into the marketplace so that all the people can see that this is what happens to a Muslim who chants these Hindu names of God. That's why he was taken to the different marketplaces and beaten and whipped in this way. So, Vrindavan Das Thakur writes specifically in this particular pastime, of course, Haridas Thakur, he didn't give up the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Everywhere he went, in every particular marketplace, he was incessantly chanting. And even when he voluntarily, for the sake of the guards who were beating him up, voluntarily, said, okay, I'll give up my life, it was only because he was internally chanting the holy name with him. And then after he was taken back and shown to the Nawab and to the Qazi, he says he'll never give up chanting even if he cut his body to pieces. But what is his chanting now? They could not realize that obviously the Haridas Thakur was still chanting, but only with him. So, the point is that under all circumstances a devotee should never give up glorifying Krishna, no matter how much resistance there is. And even when there's resistance, this is also in the case of Haridas Thakur in his pastime. Haridas Thakur was so dependent upon the Lord that he was thinking that even though he was so severely beaten and whipped and throughout all these different marketplaces, he did not in any way feel that the suffering that was imposed upon him was due to them, but he was actually thinking it was because he had heard blasphemy of the Lord, that he actually experienced that punishment when he was in the presence of the Qazi and the Nawab. They were blaspheming the Lord and he couldn't go away. He was forced to hear it. He says, I should have actually received a much more severe punishment than this. He says, actually the Lord has very kindly minimized my punishment in this way. So this is how he was thinking. So a devotee will continue, as assistants Haridas Thakur, he continued to glorify the Lord everywhere he went. He was always chanting the glories of the Lord, despite the fact that the resistance was there on the government platform to a much more severe degree than we never experienced opposition to, certainly. He did not give it up. He did not stop glorifying Krishna. Well, why wasn't he? Because obviously, Haridas Thakur felt complete shelter in the holy name of the Lord. He felt complete shelter in always glorifying the Lord. And being very satisfied in the constant glorification of the Supreme Lord, he was prepared to do whatever was necessary and to give the chanting of the holy name of the Lord to others. I'm thinking of been reading Chaitanya Bhagavad lately. I'm sure I'm the deep reading to have ever seen it. Oh, Gauri. Yeah. Books, plural?
Well, two volumes.
Yeah. In the story also, a description of Jagai and Madhai, we described how Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur were sent by Lord Chaitanya to go out to induce everybody to take up the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And he even told him, he said, actually, anybody who doesn't take up the chanting, that will kill him. And he was inducing them to go out and to distribute the glories of the Lord to everyone. So when Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, they saw this Jagai and Madhai, and they heard of their totally degraded characteristics, Lord Nityananda was thinking, surely if Lord Chaitanya delivers these two very fallen, degraded souls, he'll be known throughout the whole universe as the deliverer of the most fallen. Therefore, somehow we should go and try to induce these people. Now, these two degraded urchins to take up the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So Lord Nityananda, of course, was thinking in this way, and it was so nicely described. In the pastime, it was so nicely described how Haridas Thakur, Lord Nityananda, finally went and approached him and told him, "Thank Hare Krishna." And then the two drunkards began chasing them, running after them. And they were running in fear of their lives. They were talking to each other. And the description of the conversation between Haridas Thakur and Nityananda describes it. "What have you done now?" Haridas Thakur was saying to Nityananda that, "Look, just now look what you've done. We could be losing our lives at any moment if Jagai and Madhai were running after them." Of course, they were completely intoxicated and they couldn't keep up with them. But nonetheless, they were delivered by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, because Lord Nityananda, of course, was simply anxious to give them Krishna consciousness and to see that they were delivered. And therefore, he knew that Lord Chaitanya would deliver them. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, as soon as he heard that Lord Nityananda said that, "I want to deliver them," he said, "Because Lord Nityananda said it, they are already delivered." So, when a devotee voluntarily goes out to spread the glories of the Lord, despite the fact that there's so much resistance, then Krishna gives him that kind of encouragement from within the heart, which enables him to experience that satisfaction, to go on with that activity despite that there's no apparent immediate results. The devotee should never become discouraged when he's preaching or glorifying the Lord. He should have firm confidence that by performing this activity, the Lord will be very pleased, as he explains. Prabhupada quotes the verse, "Yaidam paramanguyam abhaktishvabhyasatita." For one who explains this secret to others in devotional service, for him is automatically guaranteed. In the end, he will come back to me. There is no servant in this world who is more dear to me than he, nor will anyone more dear. Now when Krishna sees a devotee voluntarily taking up these inconveniences for the sake of bringing other people to Krishna consciousness. And Krishna says that actually devotional service is guaranteed. One is engaged in devotional service, that means that actually he's becoming satisfied. A devotee becomes satisfied. And Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Deva Shanta. Devotee of Lord Krishna has no desires, and therefore he can be peaceful. This meditation of preaching Krishna consciousness is required to want to give Krishna consciousness to others for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And although we may not have that spontaneous attraction, it may be very, very difficult within ourselves, and oftentimes hear this question being asked by devotees so many different times. And what do you do when you don't have any compassion for the conditioned soul? It's all like one of the biggest obstacles is like, I could care less about these people. right? But that's what the devotee says sometimes. That they face it as one of the biggest obstacles, is that I could care less. I really don't feel that for so much, and I don't feel that compassion when I look at these people. I just think, you know, that these meat eaters, the last thing I want to do is associate with them. Or even try to give them Krishna consciousness. So, we may not even be feeling any sense of compassion whatsoever. But if we serve someone who is compassionate, the result is that by experiencing his compassion upon us, ourselves, then the result is that a devotee gradually begins to realize that by experiencing this mercy, by pleasing him, and by trying to satisfy him in this way, I'm actually beginning to develop a sense of wanting to give Krishna consciousness to others. It's the most unique characteristic of devotional service, of serving the devotees who are actually genuinely desirous or compassionate upon the fallen souls. Certainly in Srila Prabhupada we saw these characteristics of compassion, which are so overwhelming that Prabhupada, under all circumstances, he was just always anxious to see other people become Krishna conscious. He could not tolerate to see others suffering. And because he felt pushed, Prabhupada actually felt himself forced constantly to spread Krishna consciousness and under every circumstance, whoever he was with, to somehow try to inject Krishna consciousness. And wherever he would go, he was always preaching so vigorously. And even one time he said that, he says, I must travel like this all over the world, he says, because I'm always anxious to see that my disciples do not fall down. He was anxious. Although he was initiating so many followers, he was always anxious to see that actually I have to see that they make advancement. I have to see that they are continuously inspired, that they are advancing in Krishna consciousness. And that was his constant meditation, was that type of compassion. So when we see that when the devotee manifests that type of compassion and we become the object of that compassion, then the result is that we feel ourselves benefited as the result of being the object of that compassion, and we feel ourselves actually experiencing some satisfaction as a result of that. And the result of when a devotee is actually experiencing that satisfaction is that he simply wants to go out and to give it to others. It's a very natural reciprocation. This is the reciprocation of actually rendering service to the Vaishnava. By serving the Vaishnavas, we actually get the opportunity ourselves become an object of their mercy and compassion. So although we don't feel that kind of compassion for the conditioned souls, if we voluntarily accept it in the beginning, although we may not have that compassion, if we simply do it out of some sense of obligation, I must do it, I have to do it. If I don't take up this activity, as devotees also oftentimes experience, if I don't engage myself fully in devotional service, then I'm suffering endless. This is what devotees sometimes experience when they're on sankirtan. When they're not engaged fully in sankirtan, then there's so much anxiety, so much suffering, and immediately one begins to look for shelter. What do I do now? If you don't take shelter in sankirtan, don't take shelter in approaching conditioned souls and trying to induce them to take a book, and then you have to take shelter in something, especially in the midst of the illusory energy. I've had the experience sometimes of being thrust into a situation where, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of people, and I didn't, without any expectation, finding myself having to all of a sudden start preaching. And I'm thinking, oh no, what do I do now? There's no time to be on the mental platform and to think about, oh well, let me try to find shelter someplace else. The only thing you can do under that circumstance is you just simply have to start speaking about Krishna. You have to simply say something about Krishna. So in the same way, when a devotee is thrust out in the streets and in the midst of the Kali Yuga, Prabhupada in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, he says that the devotees are always engaged in this preaching activity, then Lord Chaitanya will protect them from falling down if they are always simply absorbed and engaged in this preaching activity, because it is anandam buddhivardhana. It is the higher satisfaction. It is the nectar for which we are always anxious for, this preaching the glories of the Lord. So one experiences a little taste from preaching that enables him to continue to go on and preach Krishna's glories. So anyways, these are some little points about voluntarily accepting some austerities for the sake of the people in general. And the most important thing to understand is, of course, the necessity that we voluntarily take it up. Krishna told Arjuna, he says, now I've instructed everything to you, now deliberate upon this and do as you wish to do. So we also, Krishna gives us the choice. He always gives us that choice. And if we make the right choice to actually take up the preaching mission and fully engage ourselves in the sankirtan mission, the result is that the devotee becomes peaceful and happy and joyful. He begins to experience the kevala ananda kanda, the naturally joyful process of devotional service by just voluntarily accepting these austerities. So, any questions or comments? Maybe some of the devotees might like to add something. Yeah,
you were talking about how sometimes the devotees may feel lack of compassion. But I could think of other circumstances which are even more, seems to be more unfortunate. Sometimes even the devotees, they don't understand the importance, even sometimes senior devotees, even though they've heard about the importance of group discussion, but someone under the rationalize that this activity is just more passion and it's not ultimately, it's not very good, and like there's so many worries and fears, so this sometimes these kind of things seem like an obstacle.
Seem like an obstacle when senior devotees don't give support to book distribution, is that what you're saying? By trying to philosophically justify how it's no longer such an important activity and diminishing its importance in the society. So what's the question?
No, I mean, no, it's a comment now, and also maybe expect that maybe
elaborate.
yeah, elaborate and you know what can be done, and what it seems to be there. Also because like new devotees here, they're seeing the example of all the devotees, and they see this kind of skepticism, which is not, doesn't seem to be in the line of what Prabhupada wanted. And maybe other person may stress so many instructions of Prabhupada, but when it comes to that specific instruction, there's somehow or another gets avoided, and they don't even, or they, you know, they even seem that they are concerned, or at least, you know, not. But sometimes, you know, certain individuals, they just they don't think it's important, or they even think that it seems sometimes that there's something wrong with it.
I don't see that so much as I mean, I can see how it would be an obstacle if it was like the policy adopted by the society that book distribution is now no longer the primary activity of our movement. There may be there in the minds of some individuals that there are other things that are just as important, and although I appreciate the point that you're making, because we've seen that sometimes persons in the most responsible positions, they don't give a priority to book distribution within their zone. In other words, many other things can go on within their zone, within their temple, or whatever responsibility that they have. So many other things must go on, but preaching for the book distribution, of course, must be given the topmost priority. And any devotee who is capable of taking up this important activity, most important activity, should be encouraged to do so. And Prabhupada even said that we should make our lifelong plans for distributing books, and even indicated that book distribution was our family business. So that what is a family business is, it's not that just, you know, that everybody is just, you know, the salesman. There are other things that also go on, which is supporting book distribution, which are meant to support our book distribution efforts. And if book distribution is the primary focus, the thrust of activities, and all these other support systems, whatever they may be, because certainly Prabhupada gave many different devotees instructions to do different things besides book distribution. And no matter what you say to these people, it would be inappropriate to tell them that, you know, you shouldn't be doing this when Prabhupada told them to do it. So they're all meant to support book distribution. That's the point. And this is Prabhupada gave the example that just like the wheels of the train must move, but in order for the wheels of the train to move, everybody has their role to play. But the real, the actual objective is that the wheels of the train move. So the moving of the wheels of the train means that we're distributing books to the conditioned souls, which is our primary purpose of this movement, and that we're also preaching and giving others Krishna consciousness, distributing prasadam. And Prabhupada emphasized all of these forms, although he did say that book distribution was the brihadmadanga, the greater madanga, because it could be heard throughout the whole world, and always stressed book distribution as most important. So as far as the obstacles of senior devotees not understanding the importance of book distribution or minimizing it in some particular way, I know that that's there maybe in the minds of some of the leaders of our society, that book distribution has to be done in a honest way, in an honest presentation, and there are certain forms for book distribution which is heard our image. Some of them think that way. It's particular forms of places where devotees are distributing books, specifically devotees who are inexperienced in book distribution. But I've never really heard anybody saying that we should stop full distribution.
Well, the point is just, it's like, for example, what I've been discussing with one before this one, and one person is saying, well, he's kind of skeptical about the devotee's rules, because sometimes he sees that, and this is a senior devotee, and he feels a little skeptical when he sees, for example, you know, that at a certain place in the team, some devotees in Europe, and it seems that they're, in his eyes, their son is not very strong, or, you know, they may not have been any normal acting, or, you know, things like that. So, he sees it like that. He's very good. Not in the sense, maybe, that, for example, that person is against Buddhism, but he's just extremely cautious. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what... Of course, it also, like, for example, being Buddhist, it's like, for example, when there's a marathon time, and everyone's working very hard. And of course, you also have seen sometimes the devotees, like right after a marathon, they fall in Maya. So I can also understand such caution on, you know, the cause of, you know, on, you know, the mind of certain devotees. So I'm just trying to kind of understand, you know, what is the balance of being cautious and of, at the same time, also be enthusiastic.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't know.
How related to the first part?
Yeah. I'm not making any connection. Is that being a big being an obstacle?
Well, the thing is, there's kind of caution, you know. I mean, if there's some kind of caution, you know, in order to protect the devotees from, you know...
But did they have a strong program of sadhana?
No, like for example, one person, he went to, you know, Hainamananda, right? And he said, well, I didn't see you in Mongol Arti. Are you the famous Hainamananda? And I know, said, no, I'm not. That's not me. And the mayor of the same person came back. I thought he told me that you're not famous. I'm not famous. So, you know, you're showing the humility, but just because he missed, you know, one more classic, how does that diminish his qualities of being the best Buddhist book?
What's the point?
No, my point is...
I don't understand what the point is.
Well, I'm just very afraid of, you know, of some kind of mentality like that may affect, you know, especially the junior devotees. I'm not saying, you know, it's not that anyone's preaching or anything, but I just like very cautious and you know, how much
the junior devotees, especially junior devotees, they should have a very strong program of sadhana.
Right.
Otherwise, what's the benefit of being a flash in the pan?
Right.
Let them go out and distribute books with ferocity for, you know, a short period of time, and then they have to build the foundation of what they're doing. So, and then when that voluntary spirit comes forward a little bit more within their heart to take up the activity as a result of their strong philosophical understanding, then there won't be flashes in the pan, but they'll be able to stay up on book distribution. So,
junior devotees,
they should have a very strong program of sadhana.
Right.
Otherwise, what's the benefit of being a flash in the pan?
Right.
Let them go out and distribute books with ferocity for, you know, a short period of time, and then they have to build the foundation of what they're doing. So, and then when that voluntary spirit comes forward a little bit more within their heart to take up the activity as a result of their strong philosophical understanding, then there won't be flashes in the pan, but they'll just stay up on book distribution. So for junior devotees, I think specifically, maybe for the more senior devotees, they may, you know, I would recommend like cutting corners, so to speak. You have to be careful still, nonetheless. It's always very, very dangerous, you know, to think that in the name of spontaneity, of spontaneous devotional service, such as Sankirtan, I don't have to follow the rules and regulations of Sadhana Bhakti. It's a very, very dangerous platform to fall. And Prabhupada cautions about it in so many different places. So, but of course, there's certain times of the year, there are marathons, and devotees say, I don't miss Madhavati. It's always been traditional. Sometimes during the marathon time, the devotees will, because they stay out late, they don't clear up for Madhavati. Can they get up in the chanting rounds and they go to Guru Puja in class and go out and book distribution? And it's a marathon. But in principle, the devotees say, well, you should go to Madhavati. So, yeah.
Since you had a very nice class on Sankirtan, I thought Bhakti Chu Swami recently wrote me a letter actually in response to Shiva Ramaswamy, for only initiating gurus in his zone to encourage all the disciples to issue Prabhupada's books. So this is a letter that Bhakti Chu Swami wrote to all his disciples. Please accept all my blessings, all glory to Srila Prabhupada. Enclosed with this letter, you'll find a copy of a letter from His Holiness Shiva Ram Maharaj. In his letter, he aptly requested all spiritual masters initiating in his zone to inspire the disciples to distribute Srila Prabhupada's book. His letter, as well as GBC Resolution No. 36, 1991, reminds me of how important it is for me to encourage you all to distribute Srila Prabhupada's book. Please take it up as the most important service you have in ISKCON. This is the best way to please Srila Prabhupada and the easiest means to go back to the spiritual sky. Even though you may not be engaged as a full-time book distributor, please try to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books whenever you can. If this desire is there, then undoubtedly all facilities will automatically become available. While distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, always be aware of the fact that the curse of the book distribution is to preach and make devotees. Therefore, it is important that you do not use any unfair means to distribute these books. We want to leave such a positive impression on the minds of the people we approach. Inspire them to read the books and encourage them to become devotees. These books are the priceless gift of Srila Prabhupada coming directly from the spiritual sky. They are the most precious objects in the material nature. Therefore, please distribute as many books as you can and try to deliver all the fallen conditioned souls around you. Although they are completely unaware of it, they need your mercy to become free from their material existence. Please shower the mercy of Srila Prabhupada's books upon them as abundantly as you can. I hope this meets you in the best of health and blissfully engaged in the service of Srila Prabhupada. Ever well wishing by your service.
Good.
Can you elaborate more on the concept that there's so much opposition and resistance to the preaching because the preaching is actually effective? But sometimes, actually, all the time, I'm not meant to fight for it. But I have the concept that people are, they don't want to take books because they're a bad person. And, you know, they're so conditioned. So how would you
Well, I was specifically referring to back time Prabhupada made that statement when there was a lot of legal opposition to our movements, and they would take us to the courts, and there was a lot of press and newspapers, and Prabhupada would always reverse circumstances by saying, oh, because Krishna's name, how many times Krishna's name was in the article, he said that actually that was the criteria of successful preaching. He said it does not make any difference if it was not, the article was negative, it's just Krishna's there and nonetheless his name was there. But he was specifically talking about that at that time also. He said that we can understand that our preaching is having an effect, because if the people would not take notice of us if we weren't effective preaching. He says, but because they are resisting in so many different ways, then we can understand it's because we're actually actually threatening them by our preaching, threatening their sense gratification. So it's not that, you know, that you know, because a devotee is always getting, you know, maybe mistreated or something like that, that means that he's, you know, an effective preacher. It shouldn't be taken out of context. The point that is being made there. So it's like if a devotee goes out and all he does is, you know, he's real critical of people, he's like every other day he's getting punched in the nose. He shouldn't think that, oh, he's the most effective preacher because he's drawn the most blood. But the point is that Prabhupada mentioned an overall picture. He says that we should know that when there's so much resistance to our preaching in the minds of the people, it is due to the fact that people are that their feelings, their sense gratification is feeling threatened. And that's the nature of the material world. In the material world, there are so many different support systems that are built in for people to try to have sense gratification. And when you go forward and you tell them, as Prabhupada says, the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya is to tell everybody, Bhokaram Jagatapa Samsava Loka Maheshwaram, that Krishna is the supreme object of all sacrifices and austerities. He says that that is the mission of the preacher, is to tell them that actually everything that you're doing is meant to be given to Krishna. All the fruits of your labor are meant to be offered to Krishna. Everything that you enjoy is meant to be first offered to Krishna for his pleasure. And when you say that, especially to the big demons that exist in the material world, it's definitely a threat. It's a vicious threat. What they see it as a vicious threat to their sense gratification, especially when you start preaching so boldly as to expose the exploits of the demoniac leaders. Because that's what Krishna consciousness does. This is probably just the example, is that when the sunlight arises in the sky, then immediately exposes everything that was in the darkness becomes exposed. All that was unseen becomes seen. So the more Krishna consciousness is spread throughout the world, and what happens is that the more that these demoniac leaders, who are actually the ones who are doing this, I mean, we're talking about doing that. This is the real mentality of the demon, I tell you. The demon is—he's always thinking about how to get himself, move himself into power, and to exploit the people, and to keep them, you know, to keep them completely, you know, controlled, so that he can fulfill his demoniac objectives. But when we come out and expose them, as what Prabhupada does in his books, and what a preacher does by his preaching, to expose the atheistic, demoniac leaders of society, they don't like it. They don't like it. Now, sometimes I've had experiences, even when you go out this Harinam, and sometimes you see these people that they just like, and you have this violent reaction to the whole name. it's completely mystical to see how he just looks such a violent reaction to the whole name. You can understand this person is like, you know, he's like, has a really innate demoniac quality, and it's actually the holy name is brought out in this demoniac quality in him just by being in the presence of the holy name. It just brought it right out. So in the same way, of course, we also know that even such demoniac persons can be delivered by the compassion of a devotee. Although we're not Lord Nityananda. Have to be a little careful. We run up in but it's because that is because of the purity of the holy name, the purity of the devotee's preaching, and the purity of this movement. This movement is still the most purest thing on this planet. And because it's so pure, it exposes the contamination, all the sinful contamination. Prabhupada gives the example that in the body, when there's a boil in the body, that all the attention in the body, all the attention goes to the boil. Yeah. So if you ever had a boil, you know it's very painful. You can boil, and sometimes you get boils in your arms, and you get something. So it's very, very painful, and then everything just moves, all the attention of the body just moves to the boil. Like mind is thinking about the boil, you know, that everything else goes to try to build up resistance against the boil. So in the same way, Prabhupada uses the example that in the material world, that for devotees who are spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, then all the attention goes to the conditioned souls. Who are exploiting Krishna's material energy, who are exploiting the material nature for their own sense gratification. And when somebody's deeply entrenched in Maya, then a Vaishnava, a devotee, naturally focuses his attention on that individual. So these people are actually feeling the weight of this movement, that we're actually focusing our attention on the demoniac qualities, the characteristics of Kali Yuga, and going right to the, you know, to the roots, to the heart of it, these demoniac leaders. That's the main thrust, that's the main focus. From Lord Chaitanya's preaching mission, Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya came to kill the demoniac mentality. It's Patita Pavana, the lifter of the most fallen. So the most fallen are the candidates for Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And Lord Chaitanya came to completely kill that demoniac mentality. So therefore, representative of Lord Chaitanya, he actually wants to expose and actually to effectively deal with this demoniac mentality. So people don't like the fact that the devotees are making big plans, incorporating huge plans, which are somehow these demoniac individuals are coming within the purview of the plans of the devotees. Right? The devotees are sitting down and strategizing. Every year they come together in Mayapur. And when we talk about Mayapur, the GBC, you know, we're not talking about just the devotees. We're talking about like this country, this, you know, this continent. This, we're making plans. We're actually, every year we come together, we're actually making very big plans that it's encircling the whole globe. And everybody's meant to be caught in Lord Chaitanya's net. So nobody likes to actually have to come under somebody's plan. And these demoniac people are actually being considered in Lord Chaitanya's plan. And they don't want it. They want their independence. So that's the point. The point of it is simply is that Lord Chaitanya's come to deliver them, and they are resistant to them. So the devotee, nonetheless, he's planting seeds in devotional service. And even though these people may resist, may not be so inclined, the devotee knows is that this resistance that is there is, and the more the resistance that comes is due to the fact that actually that we're starting to actually infiltrate and make a more solid impression, impact a more solid impression in the minds of the conditioned souls, in the hearts of the conditioned souls. Especially when we see these things like these court cases and some of the other things to come. The body has to see this mind and material nature to give backlashing in our preaching. And the devotee who sees that the resistance is there, therefore Prabhupada, in one very nice purport in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, the Prabhupada talks about this point in the Bhagavatam, what's the last chapter, the second line? Remember? Oh, is that it? Oh, that's good. When something is arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should not be disturbed by it, even if it appears to be a reverse according to one's calculation. For example, sometimes we see that a powerful preacher is killed, or sometimes he is put into difficulty, just as Haridas Thakur was. He was a great devotee who came into this material world to execute the will of the Lord by preaching the Lord's glory. But Haridas was punished at the hands of the Qazi by being beaten in 22 marketplaces. Similarly, Lord Jesus Christ was crucified. Prahlad Maharaj was put through so many tribulations. The Pandavas, who were direct friends of Krishna, lost their kingdom. Their wife was insulted. They had to undergo many severe tribulations. Seeing all these reverses affect devotees, one should not be disturbed. One should simply understand that in these matters, there must be some plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavatam's conclusion is that a devotee is never disturbed by such reverses. He accepts even reverse conditions as the grace of the Lord. One who continues to serve the Lord even in reverse conditions is assured that he will go back to Godhead, back to the Vaikuntha planet. Lord Brahma assured the demigods there was no use in talking about how the disturbing situation of darkness was taking place. Since the actual fact was that it was ordered by the Supreme Lord, Brahma knew this because he was a great devotee. It was possible for him to understand the plan of the Lord. The Prabhupada describes here how there will be so many reverses, and we should not think, even great devotees, Lord Jesus Christ, Haridas Thakur, Prahlad Maharaj, the Pandavas, they all had to go undergo severe tribulations. But a devotee who sees these reverses, these obstacles, as impetuses for increased enlightenment, then there is no such thing as a reversal in the life of a devotee. He takes whatever difficulties are there and he just simply uses it as an impetus to continue to glorify the Lord. And the result is that the devotee makes advancement in Krishna consciousness. So we should not think that when we take the spiritual life, we take the Krishna consciousness, there will be no backlash, there will be no resistance from the material energy. There will be so much resistance. Just like even on an individual basis, Prabhupada tells that story how Maya gets stronger, seems to get stronger as a devotee makes advancement. I remember the devotee telling me this story about the featherweight fighter who was thinking that he was going to defeat his opponent in his next bout, so he decided that because it was a championship fight that he was going to do everything possible within his power to defeat his opponent. So he worked out more than he had been worked out with daily constant training, did extra exercises, he ate more, and figured that there's no way that his opponent could defeat him. The time when the fight came in, he stepped into the ring and he found that he was up against the middleweight because he outdid his class by all his extra exercise. So in the same way, we may do so much to try to overcome, become Krishna conscious and try to overcome the influence of the external energy. But Maya is going to test in proportion to our advancement, Krishna consciousness. And what little insignificant tests or obstacles may come in the beginning, their tests are going to become a lot more severe as we actually make advancement. And Prabhupada even said in one morning while conversation, he says, no one can be recognized as a great devotee unless he's been severely tested by Krishna. He said, severely. It was really, he emphasized, and I remember Trey Rishi was talking to me there. You could hear the devotees practically gulping. This is probably gave the example of Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj. They were recognized as great devotees because of it. Here, we just look at this picture right here. So we know it's going to there's going to be some resistance from this material world, and it's going to come. So many obstacles may appear to be there, but the devotee, the final test, the time of death, the devotee sees whatever obstacles come before him, he just sees it as an impetus to make further progress, just like Guru Maharaj, the time of departure from this world. Death personified came right before him as the flower airplane was approaching him, ready to take him back to Vaikuntha. So Guru Maharaj saw death personified. So what, instead of being fearful of the presence of death personified, he just stepped on his head and used it as a step to get into the flower airplane. So the devotee sees that, and whatever comes before him, he uses it as a step to go back to Godhead. Alright, the demons are going to deal with us this way. Material energy is going to backlash this way. Okay. Well, he doesn't retreat. He just sees it as an opportunity to increase his surrender. And uses it as a stepping stone to go back to that.
When receiving books, we're making an extra effort like have honest techniques. Like the purpose for this reading book is to make books.
Make people Krishna conscious.
And okay, make people Krishna conscious. So therefore we should make sure we give them a good impression.
Make sure that we give them a good impression?
A good impression, yeah. In other words, we shouldn't. Like one common misconception or one common idea about the devotees or when the materialists think the devotees is when they're standing on the street corner and being very bushy and chase you down just to get a buck. So I understand that there's going to be natural opposition, not everyone's going to stop.
Right.
And you actually have to do work very hard just to get somebody's attention, especially in a busy city like Boston. But if someone already has bad or misconceptions about devotees, shouldn't we make an extra effort to do it in a very proper or pleasing way to the Supreme Court?
They may have a predisposition, which is a result of their own envious mentality. And then they have a lot of misconceptions about our movement. And obviously, we can't just, we have to be very, very careful that we don't just simply compromise our teachings and our practices in such a way simply to satisfy the whims of the sense enjoyers. And because the result is that you will not be able to effectively make an impact on this materialistic society if we do it according to their standards, their criteria. The fact of the matter is that they think that everybody should just simply be a philanthropist, and they cannot understand why we're utilizing so much of our energy just simply to try to induce people to take books. Why don't we simply go out and open hospitals, feed people, and do something with our energy instead of just standing on street corners as they perceive it as, begging for nickels and quarters or panhandling. You've heard all these different, I'm sure, these different predispositions, which are gross misconceptions. And so the point is that although we want to give them a good impression, a devotee should be thinking of that good impression means that we actually want to give them a genuine religious experience. Not that we just want to look like that we're just like some philanthropists. Otherwise, why would we be out selling books? if that was our desire to create this type of impression. So, point is that there's always going to be people who are going to criticize and find fault, no matter what we do. So we shouldn't go chasing them down We shouldn't go running them after the people. If somebody is not interested, I mean, a devotee has to learn how to be mannerly and gentlemanly and how to properly present himself on book distribution and on all these things. It must be learned by all our distributors. It's very, very important. And everyone should actually understand the basics and get basic training of how to represent the society, especially when a devotee is a devotee and he is representing this movement. But it doesn't mean that, you know, that we don't approach the conditioned soul and try to induce them to take a book. And people oftentimes they'll say, you know, why don't you just go practice your own religion somewhere? Why do you have to bother anybody? But that's our religion. But they can understand that. The highest religion is Kali Kalara Dhamma Krishna Nam Sankirtana. The fundamental religious principle in this age of Kali is to induce others to take up the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. That is the fundamental religious principle in the age of Kali Yuga. And it's the highest method of satisfying the Lord in this age. So they think, you know, why don't you just stay, go back in your temples and just do your thing and leave us alone. But a devotee is compassionate.
Again, another point I think of is, I didn't really want to do book distribution before I actually did it. And now I'm still new to it and I'm actually getting more and more into it. If I see something that I don't necessarily agree with, or that I think might not be to the best interest of our sanctified movement, I know. My question is, what could I do? Like, if I see something that I think might be a detriment to preaching, okay, I understand that that not everyone's going to want to stop, and you do have to make a very strong effort. But if someone's making an effort that might give someone the wrong impression, I mean, even if they get a book, they're going to go home, and when they think it's devoted to anything, I despise because I got a study. I mean, I understand ultimately it's for their benefit whether they like the story or not, they got the book. But what if I just didn't think it, maybe this devotee, and I know I might just be my mentality and just want to criticize, but I noticed a few things I just thought, even though the techniques were honest,